Okay, welcome everybody. Another edition of Conversations with Dr. Cowan and Friends. And this is going to be an interesting conversation, I hope, and I know actually, because Omar, and I always stumble on the last name, Al-Madani, not sure if that's close enough. Is the newest addition to the staff of the new biology clinic. And just like when all the other practitioners have come on board, we've done a little interview to introduce our people to the new practitioner. So, but Omar has, there's a very specific reason that I think Omar is joining us, at least from our point of view. And there's going to be other reasons too. But unlike what you would think for a online clinic, Omar is trained as a plastic surgeon. This means he's trained as a surgeon. He lives in Paris, and he'll tell us a little bit about his background. And the first question that should be on everybody's mind is, why would a surgeon be joining an online new biology clinic practice? I would think that's a good question. But here's my reasoning, and here's my answer to that. So obviously, nobody listening to this probably wouldn't disagree with this. There's a lot wrong with medicine these days. Like a lot wrong. And that's like the understatement of the year. One of the things that's wrong is people have unnecessary interventions that actually do them more harm than good. I used to say, Omar, that after questioning people for 20 years in my practice, somewhere between 60 and 80% of people's medical problems. Serious medical problems had really had an origin or had something to do with a medical intervention. Like, they were fine and then they took a statin drug, and next thing you know, they have, quote, Parkinson's disease. And, they were fine and then they got the flu shot and then they got paralysis. All these were directly related to medical interventions. And some of them are related to surgical interventions. Now, there's some of that could be like, and again, I'm no expert on this for sure, but I've heard that the incidence of dementia and so-called memory problems and neurological problems is actually directly tied to how much general anesthesia you've had in your life, which is not that surprising, because since the whole point is to poison your brain so it doesn't work, so you don't feel anything, it wouldn't be surprising to me that the more of that you've had, the less brain function or mind function you end up having later in life. So that's one reason to avoid it. Another reason is, I think from a new biology perspective, and the perspective that I think both of us are coming from, that the surgical lesions are not the source of the problem. Like the gallstones or tumor is not the disease. It is a manifestation of the disease. And therefore, it's a by almost by definition, surgery is a superficial solution. I don't know if you would agree with that. Just because it's a superficial solution doesn't mean it's not necessary. And so I don't think either of us are coming at this from the point of view that there's never a surgery that's appropriate, because I don't actually, like if I have a knife sticking in my back, I hope I can find a good surgeon to take it out and clean up the wound. Maybe put a few maggots on it to help clean it or something. But so that's not what we're saying. But to me, it would be an incredibly valuable service and something that I don't think exists anywhere in the world to have a surgeon talk to people about
Not getting
is
some.
really the way you want to
Yeah.
go here. Like, nobody's doing that. And
Yeah.
it's, oh, the guy said I have to get my knee replaced, so there you go. Or the guy said I have to get my gallbladder out, so that's it. Maybe that's right. I have a strong suspicion that it's not. So,
Yeah, so thank you, Tom, for this excellent introduction as usual. I'm interrupting you to tell you that your voice has gone down suddenly. It usually happens.
oh, yeah.
Maybe it will go back again, but until then, I will try to answer what you said. So, as you mentioned, I will be introducing myself as a new face for your community, but also as a practitioner in the new biology clinic, which I'm very happy to join. As to how I would find myself as a plastic surgeon, as you said, interested, actually, it's like a dream come true to join the clinic. I would be answering that and all of the questions you mentioned. Yes, I agree with everything you said. So my name is Omar, and I found myself with the kind of a green card or golden opportunities to indeed do whatever I want in life when I was young. So I had made my plan in order to do good. So I had always had this intention. I just wanted to see what is true, what is good for people, and offer that to them, and didn't fall into all the pitfalls that my colleagues have fallen into. So this allowed me to really see what is true and not being afraid to embrace it and offer it to people. I had found myself in a difficult situation when I had my first and only year as a primary physician. Like, I would have be taking direct personal responsibility in offering surgery, as was expected to, as a plastic surgeon graduate in a public hospital. And indeed, I had already came to the realization that surgery is not the best treatment often. So I was in this dilemma. On one hand, I was expected to do surgery because I am a surgeon and it's part of my training, and I didn't find this as a justification to impose surgical treatments when there is much better alternatives. And the public hospital was not the correct environment to suggest that or to defy every falsehood that I have come to witness during all of these years. Because throughout all of my medical training, more or less, I was aware of many things, but not to what extent. And every time I would go behind a rabbit hole to check, like to be able to answer the patient, doctor, do I really need to do this? And every time it would come out that no. And among other things as well. And so when the special restrictions came in 2019, 2020, that was the year I was in the I was going to start taking primary responsibility. So that was like a perfect excuse for me to step out of it and not take any responsibility in imposing covering face or a rubbish PCR test or whatever that would imply that they would have to stay home or to be prevented from travel or cancel a surgery or whatever. I didn't want to have to do anything with that. So I quietly and slowly retired from all of that. And one of the realizations I have came through all of these years and with all the immensity of fraud we have witnessed is that you cannot help people who cover truth. They don't want to see it. Regardless whether you warn them or not, they will not believe. And so I realized that the best way I could help people and do good was to answer questions to those who are willing to accept truth and are truly seeking for it, the people who are able to see. And there is no community or any institute I know of that is in the service of truth and have come to the correct concepts and truth in life as this new biology clinic that you are directing. So it is an immense pleasure to be able to communicate with the like-minded people as yourself. and to be in the help of the people who are familiar with all the principles that you come up with, and not to be it's also kind of being gentle to people, because many people are not willing to accept that you cannot take God out of the equation, that the solutions are indeed very simple, that they have been lied to about everything, and so on. And so this implies also to surgery. As you said, falsehood, wrong ideas, they become no longer funny when it implies permanent mutilation. And so this is something I didn't want to take part of it. I didn't want to remove anybody's appendix just because it's part of my training. No. If this guy doesn't need to get it out, I will not be the one doing it. If you're the one, I'm talking as a resident for let's say, yeah, 6 months or 1 year as a trainee in general surgery, like everybody, all of my colleagues would be jumping on the opportunity to do a surgery. I would be like, no, you did the indication, you go ahead. I'm not going to be doing this. There's no clear indication for me that I could do this gesture, honestly, this procedure. And even if this is the case, you have done already 1,000 ones. If this increases the chance of this patient getting the surgery, but whatever percentage, I think he should do it. And the fact that it's a training I should be doing, I don't have it. But anyways, I had largely compensated for this lack of training later on, but not as a primary surgeon. So I'm very glad to be finally being able to help truly patients, all of the things that I have learned throughout these years as an independent, honest, with no interest, really, the doctor or surgeon or individual.
Yeah. Got it. You know, what, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, good. One of the things I think that's at work here is, you know, all of us lack the experience of what would happen if we didn't do the normal medical procedures.
Absolutely, yes.
When I was in medical school, there were still like old guys who had been around before antibiotics, more or less, and before a lot of the things which we think of as common. And so they could give you an idea of what might happen. But now, like, I'm one of the old guys, and I grew up in the era where we don't know what happens. And I have an example of that. You know, I have this cat, Pumpkin, who's taught me a lot. And he comes home once with a big cut on his ear. And, you know, he's never been to a vet, or I didn't do anything. And he seemed fine. And then the next day, his ear is hard as a rock, his entire ear. And I was an ER doctor for a while, and, you know, primary care for 30 years or 37 years. I never saw anybody with a rock hard ear from a quote infection, who wasn't treated with antibiotics or even IV antibiotics. So the honest truth is I had no idea what would happen to that person. Anyways,
absolutely.
Yeah. So Pumpkin goes off 2 days later, he comes back and his ear is pus. You could feel it. And again, I never treated anybody without antibiotics and without surgical drainage who had a abscess of their entire ear. But Pumpkin seemed fine and I let him go, or I didn't have any choice. 2 days later, he comes back again. There's a little hole in his ear. His ear is fine and he's just normal. And a week later, he couldn't even tell which ear it was. And it hit me then that, you know, all the years that I probably didn't say this like this, but doctors say, oh, if you don't treat this with IV antibiotics, it's going to go to your brain and you're going to die of brain infection and blah, blah, blah. They've never once seen that happen.
Yes, but they were instructed to answer as such whenever this question pops up, whether in a MCQ or in a an exam. So they were taught that this is how they were expected to behave, and otherwise they would be sued or whatever.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
So yeah, so
that, yeah, go ahead.
What is special about myself is that I didn't fall into that. I have been aware that people can be unanimously agreeing upon something that is false. So it is, if you take seriously your responsibility as a doctor, I mean, this is why you have been promised to be paid so much, is because you are expected to give your honest opinion from your own research and what you truly believe that to be good for a patient.
Yes.
So if any doctor took this seriously before they would impose any harm, which is the first principle as a doctor, do no harm. If they are accountable in front of God for this engagement, it would be enough for them to find what is true. But since they are not, this is what leads them further into falsehood. And so if they don't believe that certain organs are already in perfect design and they do serve a function just because they haven't reached to a conclusion about this this thing and claim superiority and knowledge and about what they can achieve to in creating any form of life or something that resembles it, along with other false beliefs about pathogenic living organisms or so on, all of these have detrimental consequences. But as you mentioned, for the role of surgery, of course, there is a role in touch, in healing. That's for sure. And so this is what the definition of surgeon is. It comes from like manual labor or manual intervention. But it is the surgeon's responsibility to, as you said, to make sure that any intervention will do no harm and it will be of benefit of the patient. So if there is foreign materials or debris or dirt or like uncleanliness in a wound, then it is up to the surgeon to manually make it clean and bring in the favorable conditions for the regeneration, which is inherent to be achieved in the best conditions. So if this is in a form of a suture that brings in two edges of a wound of a loss of substance for them to regenerate in the least visible scar, then this is what is indicated. But as we advance with the science and all that we are able to learn and the openness in communication in culture, it becomes even more big of a responsibility for surgeons to actually see from different domains, different cultures, what can be brought, what can be good for patients. And this is the role I have taken for myself, because I was not after what many of my colleagues have been, even though they would not admit it. But I genuinely did. So if it takes somebody from plastic surgeon to go see what goes on in the lab and then go see what goes in bioinformatics or tissue engineering or whatever, then why not be it me? Like, I would be happy to spend more time in doing research. So this is why I have done masters in biology and worked in tissue engineering labs, working with so-called stem cells, all in the intention to see whatever that could favor the outcome of regeneration or wound healing, so that I can try to bring it or apply it to my patients. And one of the realizations I have come into is that the solutions, yes, they are very simple, and you should not rely on whatever people endorse or believe in to be good. You have to look for it yourself and for the the good news for everybody is that it is indeed very, very good, what is naturally and easily found all around us. And it gives much better outcomes, and it fixes a lot more problems, and so on.
So maybe can you give an, let's try to see an example of a situation where, you know, surgery might be recommended, and how you would go about like asking the patient or working with the patient to find out A, whether it's necessary, and B, anything else that might be helpful to them.
Yes.
So for instance, somebody has abdominal pain, maybe right lower quadrant pain, and they say, oh, you need to have your appendix out. So what would you, how would you go with that?
So this is a question like, how would I go with that while I was in a public hospital? I didn't have the freedom to do that. I was expected to follow guidelines, but luckily I did not have the direct responsibility, except very briefly.
Right. So now we're not in a public hospital anymore.
Yes. Yes. So I would, if it's the case in the appendix, I mean, just like anything else, if you look at the literature and the statistics, I have never been convinced that there is an indication to remove the appendix, or that there is like this potential benefit of prophylactically removing somebody's appendix. But the core wrong belief in this is that you don't need this organ. So this is something that needs to be addressed and corrected to somebody that comes with such complaint. So once you get them to be willing to work on the problem, see what your body is trying to tell you, and then we would go through all the things that might have been responsible in this episode, what the patient is experiencing. In other words, what goes on in the public hospital about checking for elevated white blood cells, doing cultures, everything is not the correct way to do it.
And they do ultrasounds and CT scans now, I think.
Yes.
And they're looking for thickened appendix wall, I think. And the claim is that if the wall is thickened and the white count is elevated, it's going to rupture, and then 50% of the people or something like that will die because of a
rupture.
It's
basically the same thing, always scaring people into accepting a rapid intervention on the spot. But let's take, for example, the example of a breast lump. So I have been aware about something being very fishy about oncology, like cancer and breast cancer scan and whatever. But I thought there are many people, hundreds of thousands, undergoing breast amputations. And there is a new field called regenerative medicine, regenerative plastic surgery, tissue engineering. Let's see what this can offer to these people for reconstruction. But also it leads to the same. You realize that it's much better, and it's basically the same approach as well, whether it's prevention, curing, or favoring the outcome of said surgery. If you see the true causes of what causes problems, symptoms, sickness, address it correctly, like eliminated toxin, detoxifying, movement, facial stimulation, lymphatic drainage, improving elasticity of tissues, massaging, exercise, sweating, Grounding, good diet, and most importantly, this, yes. This is how you correctly address these things. It's much simpler, and it wouldn't require all the chain events, because once you get in, it gets very, very complicated. Like people think, or might be given the illusion that it's just one intervention, but usually, as you said, most of the work and what we see, what people complain about, eventually is traced to an intervention in the past, no matter how benign it is seemingly at that point.
So let's go back, if we can, just for a minute with the appendix thing, because I then we'll get to the breast lump, if that's so. In this acute situation, have you read anything or had the experience of actually how many people go on to have this catastrophic outcome when they have, say, a thickened appendix wall and an elevated white count?
Well, this goes back to back in my early days of residency surgery, me looking into these questions. And it just wasn't conclusive. When and I have learned over the years not to rely, because after all, it's the same journals. But as the approach that you have taken in a lot of your works, if it sounds wrong and there's no proof, like there are no real numbers of people dying because they have perforated appendix. And I have seen cases where we were taking in very urgently in surgery. And honestly, what we do afterwards with the debridement and all of that, I'm not sure that even in this case we have saved anyone, because the sequelae are also horrible of the intervention. It's not like she was about to die from perforation and then she came and then now she's fine. No, there are always also sequelae. So as for the example of Pumpkin, maybe after all, we don't know if the patient would have been fine after a month or two, and she would have forgotten everything about it if we didn't rush her to the hospital and open up her abdomen in a permanent scar from up to down and destroying all of her face, like abdominal wall fascia and permanent scars and
Right.
whatever. Because in creation, as you can see, there's always this phase of tissues not resembling anything. Like you don't distinguish it. And as you said, we have not allowed in our modern days or history to be able to see what would this would look like. And I would like to mention an example that you have mentioned recently about maggots in a wound, like in war victims, that they take a long train trip, and when they arrive at the hospitals, if we had allowed their under the bandage or their wound just to do the business, when they opened it a few days later or a month later, these were the people who had the best outcome. So it's only these kinds of anecdotes that we can, like the one you said about Pumpkin, these are more valuable than what maybe 6 years of residency in plastic surgery would teach you.
Right. So let me just see if I can clarify this. So, first of all, we don't have any hard numbers that 60% of the people who have a thickened appendix, which is, the reason most people get surgery, they die. That we'd if without any intervention, we don't have those kind
I
of.
wouldn't even rely at this point, ultrasound and all of this. It's very subjective. Yeah, because some patients just by, because they tell them you are planned for surgery, so in preparation for surgery, you need to stop eating at all. Now you need to fast for the surgery, and then surgery is delayed, so the patients found themselves doing an 18-hour fast. Maybe this was enough for whatever problem they had, for them to just figure it out. Well, as if you just intervene it recommended, do you feel like fasting and you just tell them just go ahead and fast, relax, or whatever, this episode would have just passed away by itself.
And do you have any experience or any sense of how many people were told, oh, you have an elevated white count, you have pain, you have a thickened appendix on a CT scan, and then, you know, schedule for 12 hours later and they fast, and then you go in there and the appendix looks pretty normal?
I don't have statistics on that, but I've seen similar cases, whether it's for a cholecystectomy or for a appendix or for a lesion in the colon, where we plan for surgery 3 months in advance and then we do the excision and send it to the anapath, and I go look at the anapath and the pathologist says he didn't find any lesion. Yeah, I've seen things like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Have you seen it with appendicitis?
No, I didn't have much experience with that. No.
Yeah. We recently had a friend of mine who had a clear diagnosis of appendicitis, and he basically fasted and took some turpentine and it went away.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, but again, it's one of the problems. It's just like with pumpkin. I would feel better if I had 100 cases like that. And
yeah, so this is what is also great about this clinic. So we will finally be telling people like how things really work, and then we would hopefully be able to document it and like show it to people.
Yeah, right. Okay, what about this, you know, the appendix one is tough because it's so acute and so urgent and there's so much fear, and that's a little bit of a nightmare. But something that came up a lot in my practice, a person who had a episode of pain in their right upper quadrant, and then they do an ultrasound and then they have diagnosed with gallstones, and they tell them that you have to take your gallbladder out, and they're pretty much asymptomatic when I see them, but they're scheduled for surgery. So walk us through what your thinking on that situation is, and maybe where you would go with that.
Well, the most important thing, and this is what I'm able to communicate in a conversation with somebody, is this: the correction of ideas. First, your gallbladder, no, it is not essential. Like it does have a function.
Yes.
Regardless of what other people tell you. And the other thing is also about fat absorption and so on. Like, also, if the doctors all believe that cholesterol is bad for you and having lipids is bad for you, and then they tell you that not having a gallbladder would reduce the absorption of fat, and they tell you this is a good thing, this is also wrong. And as from personal experience, having seen what can go wrong or how much surgery can be detrimental and costly, not for the patient, but for the environment, for the personnel. Like, if all of, for the public money, if all of these things can be reduced or abolished and be replaced with much better, and luckily, this is the case. So these are the main ideas to be addressed to patient considering having their gallbladder removed. And then, so again, a very crucial question about the gallbladder is cholesterol, because contrary what most surgeon or medical doctors would recommend, is avoiding fat. But when you see about people experiences who have got away with gallbladder stone problems, is a higher fat diet, but it just has to be good fat, of course, and specifically animal fat. And as for pain or spasmodic event, there's also good things for that. I think magnesium sulfate is one of those. Those could help in some bouts. Yeah, so
So the bottom
the
line is that, first of all, and this was my take on it, surgery should never be the primary first intervention for somebody with asymptomatic gallstones.
No, because surgery is always about fear and despair, and they are very, very dangerous things. It means you have lost faith in your creator, the all-merciful, and that you need to disrupt his creation and not be patient enough with the repair process and so on.
And the other thing, I know exactly what you mean. I remember thinking, in especially when I was in ER, that everybody with gallstones, they tell them to eat a no-fat diet or a low-fat diet. And I used to ask the surgeons, how many people who you put on a no-fat or low-fat diet were cured of their gallstones? And they would laugh and say, well, nobody gets cured of gallstones. And I said, well, maybe that's because you had them on the wrong diet. And they didn't, like that. But I ended up putting people on a liberal fat, but particularly like unheated fat, like raw butter with the enzymes in the butter. And I was able to document a number of times that the stones that they had on ultrasound, whether that's a good test or not, I don't know anymore, but were actually gone, and the gallbladder walls were normal instead of thickened, and they basically were asymptomatic. So I've literally seen that a number of times, seem to be the solution to the problem, as well as castor oil packs over their liver, which seem to act like this magnesium sulfate, which stimulated bile flow and thinned the bile and made it, less thickened or something, as well as actually eating beet or drinking beet kvass. Beets have a chemical they say called betaine, which helps stimulate bile flow and thin the bile. So, bottom line is it's a seems to be a fat metabolism problem, not a surgical problem.
Yes.
I don't know if
And
that.
so this problem would have surely had manifestation on the body other than this episodes of pains. You agree with me, right? Yeah, so when you address this problem at its root cause, everything that was related to it would also improve, in including the outcome of the surgery if you eventually have it, right?
So, in other words, if you do surgery, you end up maybe with less pain, but overall worse. Poor digestion. You've now suffered from the toxic effects of the anesthesia. You've had a sort of mental intervention that you're not, able to heal and not good enough and defective somehow.
I have yet to witness anything good coming out of falsehood. Never. Nothing in any way. It's just comfort, but it's not good. Maybe it's comfortable instantaneously, maybe reassuring for, but it's not, it's just temporary, and then the outcomes are not better, yes.
In other words, you end up in worse health than when you started. Interestingly, I remember reading 30 some years ago that the incidence of cancer of the colon, especially the right side, was way elevated in people with a history of having their gallbladder removed.
That's, I wouldn't be surprised, yeah.
Breast lump. Surgeon says, you don't take it out, it's going to spread to your liver and then your brain and then your bones and you're going to kill you. And that's the end of it. And if you don't do this tomorrow, although I'm going away on vacation, so we can do it in 3 weeks. So you're going to die. What's the story there?
Again, a very important aspect in this also is that somehow they trick people into believing they don't need their breast. I mean, you're old enough, or you don't need to breastfeed, or it's not going to affect you not having a breast. And people fall for that. No, people should reject this very notion of just losing your breast because there's suspicion of something from my own body trying to kill me. No, this is needs to be addressed seriously. There is nothing to prove that. I haven't seen any women dying of some cells in their body, but they die of the poison they induce upon this themselves, and the despair and the fear that they fall into from what these people tell them. So first thing, nothing is trying to kill you. You need to, and certainly not your own cells. And as you have been saying, it's mostly accumulation of something, toxins or badly arranged tissue. And another thing that is crazy that surgeon would suggest is taking out the mechanism that would allow the management of the whatever garbage that is stuck, which is like the lymphatic drainage. They would suggest to you, oh, let me take the closest lymph nodes, which are meant to repair what or be a node for the flow of repair mechanisms into the region. And they suggest, let's take them out to see how bad the situation is. Where you have just made it, whatever bad it is, you have just made it much worse.
Yeah.
So that should be also out of the question, or at least postponed. Yeah, basically everything in the domain of hormones and fat and endocrine systems and disruptors, like mainstream doctor, they don't know much about it. So the I would see if I can identify any of these toxins, try to correct them, address diet, propose lymphatic drainage and exercise and fascia mobilization. And I would not go into any imagery or so on, any further tests, no biopsy. Yeah, I don't think there's any role of penetrating the integrity of the breast or the body just because a mass is palpated, and no alarming should be required. Also, statistically, I think the numbers would favor what I'm saying, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I remember, too, just some of these situations, reading that biopsies spread cancer. Now, I don't really believe that anymore because I don't think it's cells growing. But I remember this woman who had a tumor in her breast, and that you could actually see about a year later the direction that the needle went in was where the tumor started growing, right along the needle. You could actually like almost see the needle going in. So basically that we're, you know, harm destroyed the tissue, which, you know, caused a further problem. But at the bottom line, and I think you would agree with this, the real issue is the tumor is not the disease. In fact, yeah, the tumor is the body's attempt to heal the disease. And it's madness to think taking the tumor out will solve the disease.
Yes, it's better to address the manifestation, the root cause from which this was the manifestation.
Yeah. That's the bottom line here. And, you know, whether there are situations where taking, you know, this collected garbage out, you know, with surgery helps, I mean, I don't know. I would love to see if there was any, you know, actual hard information proving that. As far as I know, I don't think there is. Maybe you can address that.
I don't think, no. Because one thing about breast surgery in particular is that they say because removing one lump from one side would be very dysmorphic, what they suggest is removing the whole breast and replacing it with a silicone implant and then putting another one of smaller size, maybe on the not touched breast, and then you have to go under more surgery in order to correct the symmetry. And many women end up not doing this, and they end up either with a amputated breast or a deformed one. I wouldn't say this could be something good. And
right,
I have seen enough reconstruction to tell people to not recommend it. Still, the best way is to avoid this altogether.
Yeah.
But in case of, yes, separative cystic, maybe, for example, it's like a sebaceous cyst or a lipoma that has been here for 20 years and it's very uncomfortable, maybe a bit painful. Sometimes, yes, it could be accessible to surgery. I'm not saying there's no role for surgery at all, but let's not rush it, yes.
Yeah. So in other words, we're always going to think about this from what is the real problem here? What is your body trying to tell you? And if there's any other way to deal with this, that's how we want to go.
Yes. And also about aesthetic surgery. If people are considering surgery for aesthetic reasons, what plastic surgeon would say is only achievable with surgery, I would not rely on that either.
In other words, there's ways of getting a better cosmetic outcome or having aesthetic effects without doing surgery.
Yeah, for now, I don't know anything that would replace rhinoplasties. Maybe bee sting in the nose would help with, from your experience.
Never done that. I've done a lot of things, but never that.
Yeah, otherwise I don't see any
alternatives
to that. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Anything else you want to communicate to people here?
Just very glad to be part of this community and this clinic, and looking forward to be of benefit and help for anyone with any question.
Yeah. You know, to me, now what I'm really hearing is we have an amazing opportunity to work with people in a different way so that 20 years from now, well, nobody ever tried doing gallbladder without taking it out. Nobody ever tried this. And so if we can start accumulating experience, you know, that I think people in former times had, it uplifts the whole situation, makes everybody feel calm and confident, and we've done this before, and we've documented it. We know what can happen. We have this. That's the day I'm looking forward to.
Yes. And addressing this question of health and the correct solution and how the world works will definitely also have reflections on everything else in life. I mean, good brings good all around it, from the source, from the impact all around you.
Yeah.
It improves everything.
Yeah.
Contrary to falsehood.
Yeah. As opposed to, falsehood and fear, and then it's just sort of a spiral downward.
Yes.
Okay, I think that's good. Let's onward we go here.
Onward.
Okay, Omar. Thanks.
Next time.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.